tuned in to H10, Hanshin Tigers English News. This is episode 27, and hi everybody, how y'all doing? I'm T-Ray. This is Golden Week. Happy Golden Week to you all, and I'm coming to you on Showa Day, which is April the 29th, 2016. I've got today off of work, and so yesterday I sat down with a good friend of mine that I've just recently made acquaintances with, but he's been a huge supporter of H10, a huge supporter of the Hanshin Tigers, and I just wanted to introduce everybody out there to him as well. So I sit down with a man named Stephen Green, and you are going to be listening to our interview. I talk to him about the work that he does, not just here in Japan, but all over the world, and we also sat down and talked Tigers after that. So it's a good hour-long episode. I hope you're in for a good time with us, and I'm sure it's going to be worth your listen. So just enjoy what we've got to say. I hope that you all have a great long weekend if you're in Japan. If you're not in Japan, maybe you can envy us a little bit because we've got a little bit of extra time off. Next Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday are also national holidays. So just a little alert for all of you listeners and all you fans of the Hanshin Tigers. The games on May 3rd, 4th, and 5th are going to be at 2 p.m. They start in the afternoon in Japan. And then the weekend games are also 2 p.m. So 5 out of 6 this week, or this coming week, I should say, are going to be afternoon games. So be sure that you tune in at the right time for those if you can. And if not, then make sure that you check out the recaps and you listen to the podcast next week. All right, let's jump into today's special episode.
Who's in that chair? Who's tea talking to? Who's in that chair? Maybe veteran, maybe new. Who's in that chair? Who's in that chair? Who's in the chair?
Well, we have got a special guest with us today on H10, and maybe you have not heard of this man or his group, or maybe you have, but we've got Stephen Green on the line, and I'm just going to let him introduce himself and who he is. So, Stephen, say hi to everybody and let us know who you are and what you do.
Hello, H10. Hello, T-Ray. It's a real thrill to be on with you. I'm a big fan of the site and all your reporting, so it's a special treat to be able to speak with you in person. My company's called Rockcore, and we do concerts, live concerts, music events, but we don't sell tickets. The only way you can get into the concert is by doing 4 hours of volunteer work at a community project, which we organize in partnership with local nonprofits. And we've done it all around the world, and this is just started our third year here in Japan.
Right on. That's really awesome. It sounds really cool. So how long have you been doing this around the world? I mean, you said 3 years in Japan or your third year, but how long has Rockcore been in existence?
The first concert we did was in New York City at Radio City Music Hall, Times Square. That was 2005.
Wow.
And did it all around the States. We did our first non-US show 2008 in UK. And since then, I've been to 8 other countries. So Japan is the 10th country that we've taken it to. So it's been going 11 years now.
Sweet. That's really cool. Can you remember the very first concert that was put on? Like who headlined it or how that went?
Oh, yeah. I was so stressed out. I mean, we'd never produced a concert of this scale before. You know, Radio City is this iconic music venue, been around for 80 plus years in Times Square, in New York, you know, tons of pressure. MTV was putting it on, recording the whole show for their network back when they used to show music. And it was a big hip hop show. So we had T.I., Fat Joe, Faith Evans, Kanye West as special guest, and about 8 different acts, and it was just madness. But the adrenaline of a live event like that is can't be matched, and especially when the audience is completely made up of you know, young people who volunteered for their city and are just out for a night celebrating all that work. It's incredibly addicting.
That sounds really amazing, and a pretty impressive list of guests or of performers at that first show. Now, did you are you the creator or the founder or the starter of Rockcore, or was it a group of you? And where did you get this idea from to do this?
There's 7 of us who started the company, 6 friends of mine, 1 of 7, and it was 2 of the guys who came up with this concept. So they were concert promoters out in Telluride, Colorado. Mm-hmm. You know, Telluride's a massive ski town, and there is so many condos that don't go use during the summer. So the town will do music festivals every weekend. There might be a blues festival or a jazz festival. And these guys were the promoters for many of those. And every concert promoter, this is not unusual, every concert promoter in the world will give out 100, 200 tickets to people to help them with the production of the festival. You know, you're putting up fencing, mm-hmm. clearing out the rubbish, tearing tickets, you know, sort of odd jobs. And,
gotcha.
And it was these guys' idea, Grady and Toby, two friends of mine, who said, you know, what if we gave the whole concert away and instead of just picking up trash, you know, we build a new hiking trail network around Telluride. That was the nugget of the idea.
Nice, nice. Wow, it's just such a novel concept, just such a great idea. And so now you've been doing this in Japan, and as we talked about before the recording, you guys are doing stuff up in Fukushima, is that right?
Yeah, we were planning to come to Japan in 2011, and we were making preparations when the Great Eastern Japan earthquake hit, you know, the big one.
Yeah.
It infected Fukushima so much, and the tsunami. And it's not really appropriate for us to sort of come in and do volunteer work in the middle of a disaster area. You know, you have to take care of the people who have either lost homes or family, or, you know, gas, electric, roads, trains. We sort of put it on pause for a little while. You know, it's the same reason why we wouldn't go rushing down to Kumamoto now. You know, they need to deal with the immediate after effects of recovery. And then, but we thought, you know, we'd really love to help out. So a couple of years later, so exactly 3 years after the earthquake in March 11th, 2011, we said, you know, we're going to set up Rock Corps, and rather than do it in Kanto region or even Kobe region, we said, you know, let's go up to Fukushima, where people really need this type of community cohesion and connection. And that's where we've been the last 3 years. So we do all the volunteer work in support of community regeneration. It might be in areas of, you know, taking care of the older folks or people who've been displaced, lost their homes, or a lot of agricultural transition. So all the projects are dealing with the aftermath of the recovery, which will take years and years. And then the concert itself is in the city of Fukushima, which is a lot of fun for the folks there. You know, we brought some big acts there. We brought Neo there 2 years ago. We had Will I Am from the Black Eyed Peas last year. And then some great Japanese artists as well.
That's really cool. And so it sounds like you're mixing famous or popular Western or English musicians, music acts with the local Japanese acts. How's that been going? Like, how long does the concert run?
Well, you know, I don't know how many concerts you've been to in Japan, but there's quite a different style around them as compared to, say, maybe in Canada or US or UK. So, you know, because actually a lot of our volunteers come from outside Fukushima region, so they'll want to catch the last Shinkansen home.
Right.
So the concert actually started 3 p.m, which is really unusual for us in production. And the concert will be over around 7. So it'll be about a 4-4.5 hour gig.
Okay.
And we usually will do 3 or 4 Japanese artists, and then we try and bring one international act to sort of add the connection to the rest of the world into the show. So it's about 4 or 5 acts, and they each play for 30 or 40 minutes. And then in between, you know, we'll show videos or talk to various volunteers who were connected with the volunteer effort. It's mostly a big party and everybody's dancing and having a good time. But in the middle of that, we want to recognize all the work that's been done.
Brilliant. Well, how do you feel it's been going so far? I mean, like you've done it twice already in that region and coming back for a third year, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But how did you feel about the first 2 years up there?
Well, it feels fantastic. I mean, any chance that I can have to come to Japan, I just love. Partly because everybody has really just embraced the Rock Corps concept so much, and we have you know, these super fans who are so eager to get involved every year. Volunteering doesn't have sort of the same place in Japanese culture as it maybe does in English or U.S. or Canadian culture.
Right.
You know, you don't have sort of the large national type volunteer organizations that we might be used to places we grew up. But when asked to kind of come and get involved, people are incredibly thankful to have the opportunity.
Aren't they, though?
They really, you know, because a lot of times these recoveries from these disasters are something that Japanese people can only experience through watching television or reading about it online or in the newspaper.
Right.
And not something, you know, maybe you'll see a collection box here or there for recoveries in Kumamoto or before that in Tohoku, but mm-hmm. to have a chance to actually go up and get involved with a small local nonprofit organization and meet other people. And the folks have really, really responded to it. We've been thrilled at the response thus far.
Well, and I think people in general in Japan want to help, and particularly, you know, with these two recent huge earthquakes, for the most part, or very often anyways, a lot of these people have connections with somebody in that city. They have relatives there or friends there or whatever, and so they want to get out there and help, but they just don't know how or they don't know what to do. And so I'm guessing that when an opportunity like this comes along, it's kind of win-win, because not only do they get to go and help people that they would like to help anyways, but they get a free concert, you know, to boot, so...
No, it's exactly the way it's supposed to work, T-Ray, is that the music is incredible, right? Because mm-hmm. music connects us all.
Yeah.
And you might have this idea that you want to get involved and help out somewhere, but you don't really know where or how. But then all of a sudden, you know, when you have Carly Rae Jepsen, or we have an ambassador this year, Takamina, great Japanese pop artist, when you have... Mm-hmm. these great artists, these ladies talking about, hey, we're going to be up throwing a celebration of this area. Would you like to come get involved? That's the game changer. So the music really connects everybody, and people are thrilled to, you know, they would have done the volunteering anyway for the most part.
Right.
But that music and the concert ticket just sort of pushes everybody into that final commitment, as it were.
For sure. Yeah, that sounds awesome. So you obviously you've just kind of let us know that the headliners for this concert will be Carly Rae Jepsen and Takamina. Those are kind of the two, I guess, headliners or big names. So how many volunteers are you expecting or hoping for this year?
So the place we do the concert is the Izuma Recreation Center. It's kind of a multi-purpose hall there in Fukushima, mm-hmm. and that holds 4,000.
Okay.
So starting in the last week of May and going right through the summer up to the day of the gig, which is the 3rd of September, mm-hmm. we'll do somewhere in the neighborhood of around 75 different community projects. On average, they'll have 45, 50 people at each project.
Okay.
And so we'll fill the Izuma Center there with about 4,000 people, which is it's not a huge hall, but
right.
It's big enough that when you come in there, you know, you went and you did your volunteer project with 50 others,
yeah,
and you get to meet up with them beforehand, and you know, it's a nice center there just outside the city, and you know, there's some vendors there and food and drink, and everyone's meeting up, and then you go in the Izuma, and you see 4,000 other people who've done the same thing. It's uh-huh. really powerful. It's a great way to experience a gig.
It sounds like an amazing way to unite people as well, because like you were saying, you've got your volunteer crews or teams that you go out with, and then, yeah, you get to meet up with them, and you kind of forge that friendship with them that I'm assuming is going to go beyond just the concert, right? So that's another plus to Rock Corps and to having these volunteer missions as well as the concert, right?
Well, just to put a little point on that exact concept, we just did our press conference day before yesterday, mm-hmm. and I met a couple of the folks from Fukushima. We did the actual announcement in Tokyo, but some of the crew came down from Fukushima, and they shared with me that there's now, at least that we know of, at least one Rock Corps baby. So
wow.
A couple met while doing the community project 2 years ago. Last year, he came to the gig, of course. It's the way it works. Sorry, moms. Well, mom was at home pregnant.
Right.
And now there's a little 9-month-old Rock Corps baby.
That's
just a funny story to show how it does really connect people, sometimes all the way.
Amazing. Amazing. That's really cool. You know, I could talk about this forever, and actually I have a few more questions if you don't mind. The first one is, what's the nature of, like, for example, this coming year, what's the nature of the volunteer work? I mean, what can people expect to be doing if they sign up and they go out and volunteer with the group?
So, you know, as you know, the Japanese government is so good at sort of really quick recovery. I mean, this, mm-hmm. you know, I grew up in Portland, Oregon, and we live on sort of the same they call it the Ring of Fire for earthquakes.
Right.
And we aren't prepared at all in Oregon, and Japanese people and government so prepared. So the immediate recovery is really taken care of in such an impressive way by the government, including rebuilding new houses. And of course, there's some issues with the relocation. It's really all about the radioactivity fallout now,
right,
the recovery from that. But what we do more is in what we would call the community cohesion area. Mm-hmm. So our projects are really based on helping organizations and people who have experienced some loss in some way. We had over 12,000 people who lost their lives.
Yeah.
Some families lost members. They lost their homes. Entire businesses were wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly the Tohoku region, it's a great agricultural region, but there's real
right.
challenges now for being able to sell agricultural products outside the region because of the perception of radiation.
Right.
So all of the projects we do are somehow in the recovery and rebuilding of communities. So we work with a lot of farmers, a lot of nonprofits helping farmers convert previous what you would call sort of edible crops more into cotton crops. So we do a lot of that type of conversion with small farms. We work a lot in community centers particularly where some of the older folks go. We work also, you think about all these children up there.
Mm-hmm.
I know you have a young son, and all these children don't really understand why life has changed so dramatically. They just want to play and be with their friends. And
right.
so we spend a lot of time sort of working with nonprofits who are rebuilding parks or, reestablishing what we call the sort of the social fabric that really sit underneath communities. So you're going to come up and you're going to work pretty hard for the 4 hours, but it's pretty fun. It's really fun, actually. And
mm-hmm.
we have a good time with it. So sometimes we're working out on farms and we're actually, helping the farmer sort of turn over some of his fields. Sometimes
uh-huh.
we'll be working in a community center, whether it be clearing a new area to install a new play area for kids or other facilities for some of the older folks, or
right.
Or we'll be helping set up a number of festivals have sort of popped up, local festivals, to try and recreate the community spirit. So we'll ask the volunteers to come along on a Saturday and sort of set up the festival grounds for the following day. So
okay.
somehow it's all the projects are meant to create a long-lasting impact. We don't do anything like not that there's much litter to pick up in Japan anyway, but we don't do things that are temporary in that nature. That it's all building infrastructure that can allow the community to reconnect and hopefully continue to heal and prosper.
Fabulous. Sounds great. Now, do volunteers get to choose what type of volunteer work they want to do? Or like when they come there, can they say, well, my strength is kids, so I want to do something for kids? Or is it just kind of like you come and do what you're told type of thing?
No, we have all different types of projects, and they're listed on the website. So when people register, they can choose what type of – and all of our projects are associated with some nonprofit organization. So they can choose what type of thing they'd like to do. Some people are very into doing landscaping, and mm-hmm. we've had volunteers show up with, even though we supply all the materials, they'll show up with their own landscaping equipment and hedge clippers and gloves and very prepared. Others would rather do something, a little bit more, it doesn't take as much physical output. Now, we're involved
right.
in several photo recovery charities, so this is something that I wouldn't have immediately thought in the wake of a tsunami, but, hundreds of thousands of photographs were recovered from these damaged homes.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the families were either lost or relocated, what these charities do is they spend painstaking hours cleaning off these photos, scanning them and putting them up on a website so people can reconnect with their family memories. So
wow.
some volunteers would rather kind of sit in an air-conditioned room and help with photo recovery, and others would, like to be out there with a farmer. So all of the different projects are listed on our website, and people can choose the type of work they'd like to do.
Cool. Sounds great. And actually, I'm going to post the website in the show notes, but we'll also kind of get that on the air here as well. But before that, couple just questions out of curiosity. What would you say, or I don't know if you have like numbers on this, but what's the percentage of kind of local volunteers as opposed to nationwide or people who are foreigners or people even coming from abroad, or does that even exist?
Yeah, we have a few. I mean, I'm always blown away, you know, meeting people who've flown up from Fukuoka because they heard about it and they want to participate, or a few people who've come up from Osaka. Mm-hmm. We do about 1,000 of the 4,000 volunteer spots. We actually do them in Tokyo in the Kanto region. Okay. So that is a real deliberate attempt to get people from outside of Fukushima and outside Tohoku region to come up. So automatically about 25% of our volunteers come from outside the region, just because we're actually doing the volunteer projects in Kanto region, but all in support of recovery in Fukushima. And then probably another 10% or so come from outside the region to come up and do the volunteering mm-hmm. in Fukushima. So it's around a 60-40 split. So 60% are residents of Tohoku and 40% mm-hmm. come from outside the region.
Okay. Another question. You said that it's 4 hours of volunteer work, and you said some people come all gung-ho with their own equipment or gear or whatever. Do some people say, hey, I want to volunteer 6 hours, 8 hours, 20 hours, that kind of thing? Or do you kind of draw the line at four and just say, like, you know, we only have so much work, and, like, how does that work?
Yeah, you hit it right there. We plan these projects very carefully and deliberately so that the nonprofit organization gets the commitment from us that the work we set out to do will be done in that time. Mm-hmm. So the projects are carefully planned, and that's, you know, the science that we've learned over the years of doing this, which is, you know, 50 people can do so much work in 4 hours. By the way, it's a lot more than people would normally think when they first come to it. You put 50 people together and get them motivated, they can mm-hmm. do a heck of a lot. Mm-hmm. But what Rock Corps is meant to do is really to introduce people and show them how easy and how fun volunteering is, with the hope they'll go back again and again. Mm-hmm. So even though, you know, the projects may end at 4 hours, we make this connection between people who volunteer for the first time and these local organizations who have volunteer projects going year round. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that, you know, we use the initial 4 hours to get you really enthused about it. You mm-hmm. come to the concert, you are really inspired by seeing all those people, and then you go back and do it again and again on your own steam.
Okay, sounds great. Excellent. Couple of kind of, I guess, the meat and potatoes, or the details here. I know we can find them on the website, but you said that volunteer work can start sometime in May, you said? And then you said right up until the date of the concert. When is the concert?
The concert's September 3rd, Saturday, September 3rd in Fukushima.
Okay.
And then the projects, we do have them during the week, but mostly they're loaded up on Saturdays and Sundays. And there's a split. Most of them are in Fukushima, but we also have some in Miyagi Prefecture, and we also have some in Iwate Prefecture all the way up.
Okay.
And then, like I mentioned, about 25% of them are in Kanto region, so folks from Greater Tokyo and Yokohama can do their volunteer work here and then travel up for the concert. So they go all summer, with the bulk being on the weekends.
Got it. Okay. One more quick question. If by chance somebody were to say, you know, I'd love to go and volunteer, but I don't have the time, or I don't have the means of getting to Tohoku, is there a way for people to just donate money, or is that not part of how of the setup with Rock Corps?
We are the give time people. So what we do though is we promote a lot the nonprofit organizations. Mm-hmm. So we don't take money in directly and distribute it, but we do encourage people to learn about the nonprofit organizations with which we partner. We have over 30 partners in Japan. Learn about them, get attached with those nonprofit organizations, and almost all of them are very happy and thankful and grateful to take cash donations.
Right. That's kind of what I expected, and that's sounds great. So real quick, what's the website that we can go to access all this information if we want more details?
So the if you search Rock Corps Japan, you'll find us really quick. Okay. It's just like Peace Corps, but or Marine Corps, but it's Rock this time, Rock Corps.
Okay.
But we have a partnership with Yahoo, so we're it's Rock Corps, ROCKCORPS .yahoo.co.jp.
Gotcha.
And that's where you find all the information, and also a link to our Facebook page. And on the Facebook page, you know, there are so many volunteers talking about their experience from years past, and it's a great place to ask questions and post about your experience and learn from others and meet some new friends. And who knows, either maybe the partner and having a baby, as we've learned.
Right on. So as I said, I'll put those things in the show notes. So we'll get the website link. We'll get the Facebook group or page link as well in there. But thanks a lot for sharing all this with us, Stephen. I really appreciate it. It sounds like a wonderful project, or it sounds like just a wonderful organization that you've got going here. So thank you so much for all the hard work that you're doing in Japan as well, just as somebody that lives here and, you know, sees all the hardship that people are undergoing. And you know, sometimes, like you said, I just sit there and watch it on TV and shake my head and say, what can I do? Or, like, you know what I mean? It's just in front of the TV screen, but it's great to see people from outside putting that heart and that desire to volunteer into action and finding such a great way, an exciting way for others to join in. So appreciate it, Stephen.
Well, thanks very much, and thanks for allowing me to get the word out a little bit on H10. And, you know, T-Ray, if you're able, we'd love to have you come up to Fukushima. It'd be a real thrill.
Well, you know, it does happen to be my summer vacation time, but I don't know if I should announce this on air, but hey, let's go for it. Actually, my wife and I are expecting a second baby right around then, like maybe 10 days after that. So I'm not quite sure if I'll be able to make it, but I will definitely keep it in mind.
Oh, fantastic. Well, now that we're announcing things, my wife and I are expecting our first on the 20th of September. When's yours due?
Right on. We're due on the 13th, so we're pretty close there.
All right, we're brothers in the baby making, my man.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, congrats to you and your wife. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Let's actually shift gears here, and since we are H10 and part of that means Hanshin Tigers, tell us a little bit about yourself and your history of following the team, or like how did you get in touch with, or how did you get interested in the Hanshin Tigers?
So I'm a big baseball nut, and have been for 25 years. You know, I grew up in Portland, Oregon. We got the Mariners when I was about 10 years old, but there's a bit of a rivalry between Portland and Seattle, so I never really hopped on the baseball bandwagon, played it and loved playing, but it wasn't until I moved out to Michigan. I actually went to work at a nonprofit there, and my first real experience was going to the old Tiger Stadium and just the romance of that stadium. And you know, this is 7 or 8 years after they won the World Series, which they still haven't been able to repeat since 1984. But I just fell in love with that stadium and the intimacy of it and the game itself, and ended up probably at 20 or 30 Tigers games a year. Became a real obsessive about the Tigers, which I still am to this day. So then I, you know, as being a baseball nut, became very fascinated with the Japanese players coming over to MLB. You know, first it was Nomo, and then particularly what really blew it all out was when Ichiro came to Seattle. And I just thought, you know, these players are so incredibly crafted at the sport. And what is it? Where are they coming from? What is this league? And that's when I first started to sort of really understand what MPB was all about. And it was, so it's the influx of the Japanese players coming to MLB that sort of woke me up to the quality of play in Japan. And then, you know, of course, once I started to come over to Japan for work and you know, visiting, I went to a couple games in Tokyo, and because I know the game of baseball so well, but to experience it the Japanese style was such a perfect way to sort of understand the similarities and differences in culture was through the lens of baseball. And so it's in one sense so familiar and so different all at the same time, if you understand what I mean. And
completely.
And so became absolutely fascinated with Japanese baseball. And of course, you know, because of our shared name and my dedication to Detroit, I started to investigate Tigers. It's okay, I need to figure out who my MPB team is. And then once I saw the Tigers play a few times against Bay Stars, against Swallows, against Giants, and the fan base, you know, and learning about the history of the club, I said, okay, this is the team for me. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've been a dedicated Hanshin fan. So about the last 4 years.
Wow, awesome. So do you ever catch games at Koshien, or is it mostly in the Tokyo area?
So I'm sorry to admit that I've only been to Koshien once, and that was for the high school tournament. I went to the semifinals year before last. So okay. I've been to Koshien, but I haven't had the proper experience. I'm sheepish to admit. So I have to get down this season. There's just a big hole in my baseball life.
Well, make sure you let me know when you do come, because I'd love to take in a game with you if I can, or if, at the very least, definitely meet you then.
Great.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Do you have a favorite player on the team, or a favorite moment in following the team thus far?
Well, I think I really am fascinated with this young pitcher, Fujinami. You know, I've gotten to see him pitch a couple of times in person. And he's, you know, it's remarkable to think that Fujinami is only 22 years old.
Right.
And you know, I know that his control is a little bit of an issue, but it always is for pitchers of that age. And just his ability to move the ball around and that wicked slider, it's just a real pleasure to watch. And so I think I'd probably take special pleasure in watching Fujinami develop over the years. And then yeah, I think it's very exciting this year with Kanemoto coming in and sort of a new philosophy. It's one thing I find absolutely fascinating to try and figure out is Japanese baseball strategy, which is very different than how I grew up watching the game. And Kanemoto brings something very different to the strategy. I love watching these young outfielders, Takayama in left field, and the energy they bring. And so, yeah, I think it's a very exciting time. It was a great start. Things have been in a little bit of a flat patch for a while, but you know, it's a work in progress, shall we say?
Sure is. Well, you know, Kanemoto never went on record as promising championships in the first year, anyways. So I'm okay with you know, some stumbling and some issues with them growing. You know, the growing pains that they are expected to go through with the new manager and so on. A couple of notes. I mean, you said a lot of very fascinating things, but one. You know, you said it was interesting the way that Kanemoto brings a different twist to the game or whatever. And, you know, his strategy seems to be neither, orthodox Japanese baseball nor Major League Baseball. It's almost like it's not even something in between, but it's just something completely different. I mean, we've seen both of our regular catchers steal a base. We've seen Randy Messenger steal a base. We've seen Gomez steal two bases. And so obviously running is a huge thing on this team. You know, they're not bunting the way that most Japanese teams do. In fact, they're lowest in the league right now in sacrifice bunts, which definitely couldn't be said a year ago. I think they are highest in the league in sacrifice flies, and I think they're on pace to break the NPB record for a single season team sacrifice flies. So yeah, definitely a very different approach with Kanemoto in there. And it has been interesting for sure.
Well, I certainly am glad to see, the end of those first inning no out sacrifice bunts. I mean, I would just tear my hair out watching giving away outs like that. So, if nothing else, thank God for Kanemoto changing that up.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, as I said on one of the shows, I think earlier, it's just nice to see them going for multiple runs early instead of just saying like, let's get the first run, and then you know the first run ends up being the only run or whatever. It's definitely nice to build that momentum and say, hey, like if we got a hit with the first guy, why don't we try and get a hit with the second guy too?
Novel thoughts, right?
Yeah, for sure. The other thing. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying I do worry a bit about where the runs are going to come from. You know, I think actually, when you compare my two Tigers, it's sort of looking in the mirror in reverse. You know, if we could just combine the Detroit and Henshin Tigers, you know, we have plenty of run production in Detroit and very questionable starting pitching, where it seems to be the reverse is true. I mean, every starter for Henshin that rolls out, you feel like you've got a chance for the win, but I worry mm-hmm. about where the runs are going to come from.
True. I think Takayama's off to a hot start, but he's never played 140 games in a season, so let's see how his body holds out. Same thing with Yokota, same thing with Egoshi. You know, a lot of these young guys don't really have that stamina build up necessarily. And you know, with that, their bats may come down a notch.
It's a lot of youth in the outfield, you know, and you know, either youth or really old veterans. So you really, I guess that's the worry over a whole season is will the run production be there to back up the starting pitchers?
Well, let's hope that Gomez keeps his hitting ways, especially in those timely situations. If he keeps that up, we'll be okay at least a little bit there. And you know, hopefully Fukudome stays healthy. Toritani can pick things up a little bit. And, you know, I mentioned this on my website, and I'm still kind of holding out hope for it. We've got Hayata Ito, who hurt himself the day before spring training, and he's expected to take 4 months to recover. So that would put him right around the start of June. So, you know, even if he comes back in time for the All-Star, like at the All-Star break, he may be the guy that come in. He's not quite veteran, but he's not quite rookie either. I mean, I think he's 26 years old or something like that. And he might be the guy that is able to put us over the top, or at least help us a little bit with the run production in the latter half of the season.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, I think you're right when you point out with all the young guys, you know, there is going to be that inevitable swoon there as they learn what it's like to cross the 100 games barrier. And if we can get that injection right around that time, it's perfect.
Yeah, it'd be nice. It'd be nice. Going back to what you said about Fujinami and how, you know, the control issues or, you know, see him grow and stuff like that. One thing that I often forget, and I think sometimes our listenership or readership also may forget, is he's 22. And what that means is if he had gone to university, he would only be eligible to be drafted this fall. And we're getting 4 seasons out of him. And if all goes well, each of those 4 seasons will be double-digit win seasons before he's even, you know, before his graduating class in university even comes up to NPB. So, you know, to see him grow the way that he has over the last 3 years, 4 years, I mean, we got to keep in mind that, you know, his growth is going to continue even now. And sometimes we expect him to be at, you know, play at his peak or prime level. But I think the best is yet to come with him. You know, and he's got all these pitches, and he's still refining them, and they just seem to be getting better and better. And of course, you know, he's had a few rough starts here in the past couple of weeks, but I fully expect him to bounce back from that and have a good season this year and just continue his ways for the Tigers.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he's the reigning strikeout king at age 21.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's, I don't know what it is, it's 10 or 11 Ks per 9. You certainly want to see his walk rate come down, but you know, at that age, you expect it to. So I think we're very lucky to be able to sort of watch a fantastic pitcher, always touched with Japanese arms at the arm hotel. But we're really lucky to be able to watch this beginning part of what I think will be a fantastic career.
Agreed completely. Now, interestingly, so he was the first overall draft pick or first round draft pick in the 2012 draft, and it was kind of it was a lotto pick, as the NPB draft tends to be, and the Tigers ended up winning. And then the same thing happened this past fall with Shun Takayama. I mean, it was only between us and the Swallows, but he was, you know, one of the highly sought after players in that draft, and he seems to be turning out very well so far. Not only his performance on the field, but even, you know, you talk to other teams, players, other teams, managers, scouts, everybody's raving about him. So it's not just Hanshin Tigers that are high on their guy. I mean, he could be another franchise player. And again, he just turned 23. So looking at those two, you know, like an ace pitcher and potentially, you know, just the anchor of the batting order, both being in their early 20s still, it's pretty exciting times.
I got to see the a couple of weeks ago when Henshin was playing Bass Stars at Yokohama. Mm-hmm. And so it's the first time I got to see Takayama in person, and there's just something about him, and certain baseball players have it, and he has it, where there's an electricity or a watchability around him. You know, you just can't take your eyes off him, whether he's up at the plate or he's on the bases or manning his area in left field. Mm-hmm. He's an incredibly exciting, watchable player.
And yet he also seems to have a maturity beyond his years that you wouldn't guess, like if this were your first year watching the Tigers, you wouldn't guess that he was a rookie, other than perhaps his youthful look. But he's making great plays too. He made an outstanding catch at the wall last night, and even those times that he's grounding out in the infield, there's always the chance of the infield hit, and he just seems to have that amazing bat control. But one of the things that separates him from some of the other young guys like Yokota or even Egoshi is his bat control and his ability to just locate his hits, it seems, or I'm not sure exactly what it is, but he's not just swinging at the ball to make contact the way I feel that Yokota does at times. He's actually making legitimate, solid contact. It seems like, the sweet spot is being met or is meeting the ball almost every time that he puts the ball in play, which is going to lead to a lot of base hits.
Oh, for sure. And I think I hate to compare the two guys, but even through the first 100 at-bats this season, you can see the difference in their on-base percentage. Takayama is approaching it far more like a player with many more years under his belt.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. Yokota, though, in his defense, is another guy that we took straight out of high school, and so he's 20. So he's obviously got a lot of learning to do, and I think the learning curve is a little bit steeper for him. But he's one of those guys, actually, I'd love to see him on the farm, and it's not because I don't like him or because I think that he's doing a poor job up here, but who better to coach this guy and to get his swing to where it needs to be than Kakefu down on the farm is what I think.
It's amazing to have him as the farm manager, and particularly if you're going to play every day and not quite have the pressure of playing with the big club. I'm 100% in agreement.
Yeah, it'd definitely be nice to see that. All right, Steven, any other guys catch your eyes on the team or anything else that you've noticed about the Tigers so far this year?
Well, I think I heard you talking in the recent pod about Torotani's inning streak, and
yeah.
And I maybe it's just part of what I'm still learning about Japanese baseball, and I remember watching this with Cal Ripken Jr. In those years with the Orioles, where mm-hmm. I at a certain point you just worry about. You just worry about the overall team performance, and baseball is a team game, and I understand the personal records, and maybe it's sacrilege to question as a new Hanshin fan to question Toritani's streak, but the first part of the season where he just wasn't hitting at all, it's just incredibly painful to know that no matter what. You're stuck with that in the lineup. That's a lot to give up, and the irony. Maybe you can shed some light on it for me. But the irony that he's managed by another Iron Man, and the streak baffles me. The games played streak I can sign up with, but the inning right. streak I think is just it's putting self above team, which seems in conflict with what I understand about Japanese baseball.
And certainly, I think it's in conflict with Kanemoto's philosophy and maybe even what he experienced as a player. I mean, yeah, he does hold, the super Iron Man record of consecutive full innings games played. But I think, nobody knows better than him how painful it was at the end. I mean, he was playing through the pain, but I mean, I'm sure he felt the fans' frustrations as well. And the more I talk to people that actually witnessed Kanemoto in his later years, the more I realize that it must have been just really hard for the fans to sit through that and to know that anytime the ball was hit to left field, like, oh boy, they're going to get the extra base or whatever. And, this season has been a real indication, I think, of how badly Toritani's defensive game has fallen. He committed another error last night. He failed to turn a double play that I think should have been a double play as well. So, I mean, it just seems like, you know, like you hit the nail on the head. We're putting player before team here, and it just can't be done, especially if you're looking to compete for a championship.
How many more years is his contract in place for?
If I'm not mistaken, so he signed at the start of the 2015 season when he was contemplating leaving for the States or for Toronto, possibly. And he signed for 4 years, so that would put him as signed through the end of 2018.
That's brutal.
Yeah, yeah. He's blocking Hojo at shortstop. He's also blocking, we've got Ueda, who we drafted a year and a half back, and we drafted him straight out of high school. He's another shortstop. So these are two guys that would love to get some playing time, but obviously they're not going to see any. You know, if stubbornness wins out, they won't get any until 2019.
Yeah, it might just be one of these cases where we have to find an injury for him just to sit for a little while.
We need to hire, like, Mo Sizlak from The Simpsons to go whack him in the knee or something like that. I'm not really sure. I don't know if everyone will catch
Nancy
that.
The old Nancy Kerrigan strategy.
Yeah, exactly right, exactly right. Yeah, so we'll see what happens there. But, yeah, there's just some interesting, it's interesting times with the Tigers. I mean, it's almost like a changing of the guard in some ways. And, you know, you can see Fukuhara and Ando are kind of at the end of their days as well. They're getting a bit long in the teeth. And I'm going out on a limb here, but this is probably going to be their last season with the Tigers. And that's going to mean, hey, we're going to have to find some relievers that can actually, you know, bail the team out, because that has not been the case in the past. And we've used Ando and Fukuhara. We've leaned on them heavily in those tight games. And so somebody's got to step up. And right now, Sayuchi is a guy people seem to have their eyes on, but he just doesn't have the control. I mean, you know, as much as we say Fujinami doesn't have it, Sayuchi does not have it either.
No.
So.
No, you can't rely on your starters to be pitching these 8-inning, 7.2 8-inning games and
130 pitches and yeah
no way.
Yeah, so we gotta definitely get some guys in there that are just going to be strong in the bullpen. There's lots of guys on the farm, but it's just a matter of finding who's going to fit best where. But
I mean, I think that there's always a constant debate in baseball, isn't there, about how much influence the manager has. I think we as fans probably over-attribute a manager's influence on a team. You know, we talk about chemistry, or we talk about a clubhouse, or we talk about attitudes. You know, at a certain point, the players have to perform on the field. It's not the manager out there. The exception to that, I think, is how a manager handles his pitchers, and particularly his bullpen. Mm-hmm. And that is where, you know, in particular Kanemoto, a position player, you know, as much as you've been around baseball, until it's you and it's your, you're on the hot seat, you're the one making the calls. That's probably the greatest part of a new manager's development. So I think you've really sort of shone the light on the piece of development as the young players develop, both in the field and starting pitching. Can Kanemoto figure out how he's going to work with the relief corps?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that he kind of addressed when he came in, that he's never been a pitcher and he's never worked closely with them, so he's not always sure about, you know, what the best timing is to switch pitchers or, you know, any of that stuff. And obviously, you know, he said he's going to try and rely on the coaching staff a little bit more in that, but it's something that he's got to learn on his own as well. Yeah, certainly, I think one of the things that a lot of managers or even a lot of players will tell you is that, you know, it's one thing to call a game from the booth or from the, you know, behind the TV screen where you say, oh, this needs to be done now. But when you're sitting on that bench, you know, in that dugout, and you've got to make the decision, and you've got to make the decision on the spot, you know, and a few wrong words mean that you've made the wrong crazy decision, but also a few lack of words means that you keep the pitcher in too long. I mean, it's a high pressure position with a lot of decisions that need to be made right then and there. And it's definitely not as easy as a lot of us think it might be.
No, it looks very easy from where we sit. And yeah, they're privy to so much information that we're not, you know, what the guy was like in the clubhouse earlier that day, how he threw his bullpen in between, you know, so much information that you say, and the game is changing shape constantly from pitch to pitch and batter to batter.
Yep.
And so, you know, he's learning a new skill as much. And I heard that as much as, you know, you want to say you're going to rely on your staff. Ultimately, it's you making a decision and answering for it later. So I think that's a fun part to watch how he develops his relationship and how he uses his pen.
I'm excited to see that change and that growth this year. And, you know, I read a lot of the Japanese fan pages and stuff like that. And a lot of people are complaining about his inability to, you know, pull the pitcher at the right time or whatever. But I think that's going to come in time. One more thing, just as you were talking, it kind of struck me that one of the books that really helped improve my knowledge of the game was a book written by Jason Kendall, and I forget who the co-author was, but it's called Throwback. I don't know if you ever heard of it, but great book where, you know, this guy that played catcher for, what, I think 15 years, basically told the game as it is seen from a catcher's perspective. And, you know, who on the field knows the game better than the man behind the plate?
Oh, I'm going to check that out. I remember Kendall. He was a longtime pirate, wasn't he? And,
yeah.
Always a gritty player, so yes. I'd love to read that one. Good tip. Speaking of fan pages, man, I just have to say, my enjoyment of the team has gone up 10x since discovering H10. You know, I couldn't believe it as I was trolling around Reddit it hasn't been that long, a year and a half, and
yeah.
Discovered that there's an English language coverage of the team. I'm just really thankful for all that you do. I know how much work it must be and how much time it must take, and especially with one young child and another one on the way. So for all of us who get to enjoy the fruits of all your work, thanks for doing all that.
Hey, I appreciate the shout out, the accolades. You know, it's been so exciting for me, and you know, it's just something that I've just really had this passion for, this excitement for, and I feel like you know, finally I can do something that's going to help people. And I think that's what a lot of us want to do. And this kind of bridges back to what you're doing, although, you know, what you're doing is very different than what I'm doing. But, you know, I think all of us deep in our hearts, we want to help others. We want to feel useful to our fellow human being. And, you know, this is something that I kind of feel like this is what I can do. I mean, I love sports, and, I've got the knowledge of Japanese, and now I'm working on my knowledge of baseball itself. And if I can, you know, bridge the gap between this language barrier that exists in NPB and the English-speaking world, I want to do all I can. And that fuels me. And also words, you know, words of encouragement, like what you just told me. I mean, this really gets me going. So I appreciate it.
Well, I think, you know, for me in particular, I've listened to some of the other guys who've been on the pod with you. So, and I think for the most part, most of them speak or read Japanese. And for those of us, me as a primary member of that class who don't, you know, the ability to get to know the team, what you've opened up is a tremendous gift. So thanks for that. I did want to ask you, yeah. What's your relationship like with the team? Do they give you press access? Are you able to cover the team in the way you want? Is that an issue?
It's an issue. It's definitely an issue. I've actually been talking a little bit about that with different people, and I'd love to have press access, but I don't. I don't know if the team knows who I am necessarily. I mean, I know a guy within the organization, and then I know some of the Gaijin players on the team. I've met up with them or talked to them. But I don't necessarily have the absolute access that I'd love to have. And that's something that I'm hoping to work on. In fact, I was, just a side note and kind of a personal story, and we'll share this and maybe we'll wrap things up. But, I was really kind of feeling down on my luck just last week. I guess it was last Tuesday. And so I texted Matt Haig. We're kind of texting buddies or whatever. And, you know, I just kind of said, oh, I'm feeling a bit bummed about all this. Like, I put in all this work, and sometimes I feel like, what am I, you know, why am I spending all these hours? And he goes, well, what do you want to get out of it anyways? Or what, you know, what's your hopes? Like, what would you do if you could, and all this stuff? And he goes, like, can't you just, like, you know, get out on the field and, like, come and you know, cover the games, you know, right down here? Because I feel like that's something that the team could really benefit from. And I was like, well, I'm glad you see that, you know, as Matt Haig, but until the front office sees that, or somebody with a little bit more clout, sorry, I mean, you know, he's a player, and I'm sure he's got some clout, but until somebody else sees that, I mean, maybe nothing's going to change. But it was just great to hear that from a player, too, you know, that he was saying that he himself is benefiting from some of the coverage that I'm doing. So, hopefully.
It's great to have that endorsement from Matt, and you know, it's a tremendous gift to the franchise. So, whatever we can do as fans and supporters of H10 to support that journey, I mean, I really hope that the Hanshin franchise can understand what you're bringing to you know, us and the greater world and English speakers, allowing us to access the team. I really think they ought to know about it and support you in any way that's easy for them. You know, if that's press credentials, I mean, my God, that would really really aid your coverage, wouldn't it?
It sure would. It sure would. Yeah. Well, you know, they may actually become a little bit more aware of me, or certainly of the vast interest in the Hanshin Tigers that's out there, because Vice TV actually wants to do, they want to cover this rivalry between the Tigers and Giants.
Great.
And I'm kind of volunteering and helping them out with that, and it's still not fully like the plans aren't solidified, but it's looking like maybe July we'll be doing that. And you know, I think once that gets out there, I think that's really going to open a lot of eyes and a lot of ears to how loved the Tigers are and how much of a following they even have overseas. So yeah, that might be what opens the floodgates. You never know. But you know, in the meantime, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing because I love doing it, and that's the big thing. I love the Hanshin Tigers. I love journalism. I love words and numbers, and I mean, all of that stuff just kind of comes together with H10. So yeah, just doing my thing.
Well, we're very lucky for your passion. It certainly adds to my enjoyment, and I know others of the game and of the team. So from all of us, thanks.
Well, thank you. And on that note, I think we'll wrap things up here, Steven. It's been great having you on the line here for this long time. I appreciate all the time that you took to chat with us here.
It's a real pleasure, T-Ray. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, we're going to get that info out about Rock Core, and hopefully we can get some H10 fans out to that, and we'll see you at Koshien sometime.
All right, my brother. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Take care.
All right.